It's NewsHour with Rob Roberts and Katrina Tina.
In the news today, alien life discovered. Dinosaur born using fossilized DNA. Grass now powers cars. And the California lottery introduces the biggest scratchers ever!
And in other news, my hearing is officially shot. Thanks, Rob Roberts.
Big news, our biggest ticket ever is here. Super Ticket Scratchers went up to $1 million from the California lottery. Please play responsibly. You must be 18 or older.
Blog Talk Radio.
If you're happy and you know it, clap your hands. If you're happy and you know it, clap your hands. If you're happy and you know it, then your face will surely show it. If you're happy and you know it, clap your hands. But if
good
you're happy
evening,
and you
parents.
Know it, clap your hands.
But we're going to stop the clapping of the hands, aren't we? So good evening, parents, and welcome to the Parents Hour. This is your live internet talk show on Blog Talk Radio that focuses solely on topics of importance to parents and their children. It is also the show that encourages you to consider discussing the information presented on our shows with your age-appropriate children, of course. Please remember that all of our shows are archived, which means that you can listen to any of our shows at any time you choose. What a great way to open a dialogue with your child about subjects that are best addressed at home. I am your host, Dr. Arlene Kerman, and just by way of introduction, I am a divorce and custody attorney, educational psychologist, mediator, author, and co-founder of the Institute for Co-Parenting Resolutions. But you can check me out on my website, www.georgiachildcustody.com. Today, parents, we got a wonderful topic. It is how to create more loving and joy in your relationships and life. You better get your pencils and paper ready because you're going to want to write some of this material down. Our guest, Robert Jamieson, marriage and family therapist, has devised simple yet powerful techniques that can enable each of us to live more fully and joyfully by avoiding the common mistakes most people make. Mr. Jamieson is the author of a wonderful book, The Keys to Joy-Filled Living. Another book, Thoughts of Pomeroy, which contains pictures and thoughts to guide people in the relationships. And Don't Lose Weight, Give It Away, which explores the emotional aspects of weight loss. He is also a marriage and family therapist for over 20 years. Welcome, Robert, to the show, and thank you for taking your valuable time to be with us.
Well, thank you, Arlene. It's great to be on your show. Thank you so much.
So now, before we begin our discussion on this first segment, would you like to ask a general question or make a comment, parents? If so, you can get ready to dial. We got a new toll-free number, 1-877-259-0868. And you can join the show, and we'll answer your calls and at the bottom of the hour, and we'll have our guest answer the calls as well. Now, on this first segment of the show, may I call you Robert?
Yes, please.
Okay, so how did you get interested in this work? I know you're a marriage and family therapist, but how did you get into making the keys to joy-filled living?
Well, you know, after doing therapy for many years, what I would often do, I discovered that a lot of people would forget what we talked about in the session, and so I started to write out little handouts, how to manage our stress or how to manage our anger or joy, depression, whatever. Well, I had a whole bunch of things. And through the years, people kept saying, you know, I've got a file folder full of your stuff. You got to write a book. So at one point, I said, okay, I've heard enough feedback saying to do that. So I did. I sat down and took all those little handouts and expanded them, and that's how the Keys to Joy-Filled Living was born.
Well, now, I went through this book, and again, the title is The Keys to Joy-Filled Living, and the author's name, again, is Robert C. Jameson, J-A-M-E-S-O-N. And when I went through, I started from the beginning, and you talked about when we are with people we really care about, we really do not want to know how they are feeling. So what did you mean? Because a lot of people say, well, how are you? Fine.
Yes. And you know, it's nice to say, how are you doing? I'm doing fine. It's nice to have that level of greeting. And yet most people don't really want to know how you're really feeling. They're saying, well, I'm really feeling this deep sense of sadness, because it's like, whoa, wait a minute. Don't fill me up with all that information. I got to go someplace. So that's what most people do. In some ways, it's appropriate, by the way. But there's on another level, when we are with someone that we really care about, one way is, well, how are you feeling? We really do want to know what's going on inside of them so we can love them and nurture them and support them as they're going through their challenges.
Because you mentioned in your book that when we lose contact with ourselves by saying we are fine, we're losing contact with our inner states of being.
Yes. And part of that is, you know, when we ask someone, like, well, if your listeners are out there, well, how are you feeling? And if I say fine, okay, that's nice, but, you know, I've discovered that I could be feeling fine. I could also be feeling sad. I could also be feeling confused. I could also be feeling kind of excited. And I also could be feeling kind of lonely. Mm-hmm. Wait a minute. I'm having all those things at the same time? And the answer is yes. We do have multiple feelings going on at the same time, which is often sometimes confusing for people. But that is, if we really become aware of who we are and what's going on, we begin to realize we have many feelings going on all at the same time.
And you write the fact that by identifying or labeling what you're feeling, you create a point of awareness and an opportunity to take charge of that feeling. So
yes,
it's important to really bring into the consciousness level that you're not feeling well, you're feeling depressed.
Yes. And you're right on there, Arlene. I often say the first step to change is awareness. Like, I can't change anything until I'm aware. Mm-hmm. If I'm not acknowledging that I'm feeling depressed, then there's nothing I can do about that. If I say I'm feeling fine, but I really am feeling depressed, there is a level of I'm lying to myself in a sense there.
Well, how does somebody detect that when they are really feeling depressed? You know, you can say, mm-hmm, oh, I feel okay, and I am, you know, I don't want to burden you with the fact that I'm depressed here. So mm-hmm, you'll say to me, well, how are you doing today, Arlene? I'll say, fine. You're really not fine, you know. But how much of a dialogue should we have for me to say, you know, I'm really feeling depressed?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Do we say that to our therapist, or should we say that to our friends, or should we say that to people who are standing at the bus stop with us?
Well, that's a great question. There certainly is a level of appropriateness. Probably the person at the bus stop doesn't really care, although they might be listening to us more than others. I certainly, our partners and if we're our parents, our children, and I mean, they're them talking to us, and our close friends, those people where we take into our inner circle, I think they really do want to know what we're feeling, and I think it's valuable to share what's going on inside of us so we can get closer and be more intimate on those deeper levels.
Mm-hmm. But how much information is too much information? I mean, you know, I don't want to, you know, you say, how are you doing?
Uh-huh.
And all I expect from you to say, fine.
Mm-hmm.
I don't expect you to tell me how you're really feeling.
Well, you know, part of that is, again, there's a, I often ask people to come up with a phrase of, is this a good time to talk to you? if you have, well, you know, I really don't have good time. I've have to run out the door to get to work on time. So that tells me, or no, this is a good time to talk. Okay, that would be a good place to be able to share more intimate things. And the other question is, do you have a place inside of you that can hold for me as I share what's going on? Mm-hmm. Another good question to ask. Sometimes we might be carrying so much stress within ourselves that we don't have room to listen to someone else's process or someone else's issues. But if I'm feeling pretty at peace, I'm pretty open, I have the space, I have the time. Okay, now what's going on? Mm-hmm. So those would be two good questions. Do you have the time, and do you have the space inside of you to listen to what's going on inside of me?
Mm-hmm. The other part of the book I was very interested in is anger, because you discuss anger as a tool to get what we want, but that anger and how we handle it can be a habit. Can you elaborate on that, Robert?
Yes. Well, anger, again, from my point of view, is just a tool we use to get people to do what we want. In other words, I could say, could you please sit over here? And as long as you do what I want you to do, I have no reason to be angry with you. If you don't do what I want, now I have to ask you again and again and again. Now I'm raising my voice, and I might be yelling and screaming at you, and then maybe I have to physically pick you up and throw you over there to get you to do what I want. And then if I've trained you right, all I have to do is snap my fingers, and you jump when I speak. So again, so that's what anger is. And
well,
I usually
talking about doing this with our spouse or our pet. I mean,
we're
not differentiating between one or the other.
Well, unfortunately, we don't. We do it with ourselves too. That's the sad news with it, by the way.
Uh-huh.
The good news is anger works. We can, in fact, get people to do what we want by getting angry with them. The bad news is it works. Now I have a habit. In order for me to get you to do what I want, I have to get angry with you.
Mm-hmm.
And then I do, it's not just you, it's all those other people out in the world who aren't doing what I want. Now I'm angry all the time. So I suggest that we...
You're a happy person, doesn't it?
Yes. That's a hard way to walk through life.
I know.
Yeah. So I ask people, next time they find themselves being frustrated, upset, whatever word they want to put on there, ask themselves the question, why am I using this emotion? Robert suggests I'm using this emotional state as a tool to get them or me to do something different.
Mm-hmm.
And I suspect they're going to start to find that, oh, this is what I do. Most people, by the way, Arlene, are not aware of that. I'm angry. I have a reason to be angry because I'm just angry.
Mm-hmm.
But if you start to track it, you say, oh, I'm angry because you're not saying what I want. You're not doing what
doing
I want.
What I want. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Then you talk about hurt feelings in your book as a basic human emotion. It's not good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
It is what we do when we don't get what we want.
As well, yeah. Well, as humans, we have two primary things. The first one, if you're not doing what I want, I'm going to get angry with you to get you to do what I want through intimidation. That's the direct one. That's the real clear. The one that you just addressed, brought up as hurt feelings, is a little subtler, a little harder to pick up. And so I suggest that hurt feelings is sideways anger to control and manipulate people through guilt.
Mm-hmm.
So let me explain that to you a little further so you can kind of see that. And again, most people are not aware of this. And so, but once they become aware, then they can say, oh, that's what that is. So let's say you say to me, Robert, I hate you. I never want to see you again. Those are your words. They come to me. I catch them. I choose to use them however I choose to use them. That's the choice point. Most people aren't aware there's a choice point there, but there is. And so I could take those words and I could say, well, I thank you. I appreciate your honesty. Goodbye. God bless you. I love you. That is a choice. Most of us don't do that choice, but that is a choice.
Mm-hmm.
Or I could take those same words, I hate you. I never want to see you again, and I hurt my feelings. You don't have the power to do that. I do that. And I go, oh, God, I feel so bad. You don't love me anymore. Sideways anger control and manipulate you through guilt. And if I'm doing a really good job, you'll feel really guilty. And you'll say, oh, Robert, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean it. I'll take it back.
Mm-hmm.
Then I go, gotcha. Now, all I have to do to get you to do what I want you to do is hurt my feelings. Sideways anger to control and manipulate you through guilt.
But, again, what you're saying in your book and what we know is they can't hurt your feelings. You're hurting your feelings.
Yes.
You are doing it to yourself, and that's where control comes in.
control of ourselves or control of them?
Control of ourselves. If we can say to ourselves, you know, you can't hurt me if I don't let you hurt me.
Well, there's a lot of truth to that. And, you know, there's you often say, you know, next to every truth stands a lie. So that's the paradox and the challenge of my mind of walking through life with integrity and being aware is that, yes, you can't hurt me, but yet, you know, I am human. And so, you know, my feelings are hurt. So the key is in my mind is that once I choose to hurt my feelings or choose to get angry, what do I do with that emotional state? Do I depress it? Do I dump it on you? Or can I express it in a way where I don't hurt myself and someone else? And there is a process of that that I encourage people to do. Once I express my emotions and I get back into my center, then I can come back and say to you, giving you my request of what it is I want from you, from a mind, I'll be in my power and my neutral. So I'm not really trying.
Oh,
go ahead,
Robert.
I was going to say, so I'm not really controlling my feelings. I'm really using them to get in contact with what's really going on.
Well, how can I express anger and hurt feelings without hurting myself? That's where parents, for example, they are dealing with children. And when you deal with children, as you know, those two emotions, anger and hurt feelings, are almost an everyday occurrence.
Yes. In fact, by the way, that's how I learned about those. I watched kids, and they taught me that's what they do. If they don't get what they want, they get angry or they hurt their feelings.
So how do we handle that? What advice do you give to parents when they feel they're totally out of control with their children? They can't, the children are not doing what they want. The parents feel very angry. The parents feel, how could you do this to me? You're hurting my feelings. And the kids say, well, who cares? You know, really care, okay? As parents, we've got to be able to make ourselves well. We can't let this anger that we feel and these hurt feelings that we feel ruin our life.
Yes.
So what do you tell me? You know, here I am, a parent of little Sarah, and she is always misbehaving, and I'm angry every day, and I my feelings are hurt every day because I'm a terrible mother. Obviously, I can't control little Sarah.
Well, that's such a beautiful question, and there's so many answers. So let me see if I can kind of give you some of the answers to that, because I think that's what you're asking is probably one of the key questions every parent that I've ever met is asking. And so I try to be very practical. And so first, let me just – I find that people will say and do things, express their anger or hurt, in six primary situations. So if you're aware of those would be some times to learn to manage yourself better. One is if I'm tired, I'm going to say and do things that I normally would, which unfortunately most parents are running around exhausted. So, you know, we're in trouble there. Number two is if my blood sugar is low, if I haven't eaten for a long time, I'm going to again say and do things I wouldn't normally say. Number three is if I put sugar in. So I have a high blood sugar level. Years ago, I worked with a woman who loved her chocolate, and every time she ate her chocolate, you know, she'd want to take off her husband's head. And so finally, I got her to give me a month without chocolate, and she did, and they had a beautiful month. But, you know, unfortunately,
yeah,
she loved
it. After that, it was all downhill, wasn't it, Rob?
Yes. But she loved her chocolate more than that.
But she loved her chocolate. Yeah, that's
the
count, right?
So back off with the head. But so too much sugar will also make us very kind of erratic. Four, when there's a hormonal imbalance, you know, it's easier for women in some ways. You have it's really easy, about every 28 days or so you have your cycle. Men have one about every 45 days. It's not as obvious. We have them as well, by the way. So those will be times when it's going to show up. Number five is when we've put in some kind of drugs or alcohol. Again, working with most couples, most of their major fights have been under the influence of drugs or alcohol. And the last one, number six, is when we're experiencing some kind of chronic pain. So those are the six primary places when people are going to be raging, let's say, or saying and doing things that they don't really want to say and do. So that parent, so I would say I'd ask him or her to be watchful, okay? Maybe you can take that 10-minute nap. Put some food in, get some protein going in there. Avoid that sugar. Certainly avoid the alcohol and the drugs. Just be aware of the hormonal balance going on. And if you've got some chronic pain, how do you manage that better? So that's the first practical place to go to.
Do you find, Robert, that children express their anger and hurt feelings differently than adults?
Well, I'd like to say yes, but the answer is no. I think we're a little more sophisticated in it, but it's really, you know, as an adult, I often say that we're multidimensional beings. In other words, from the point of conception to here, all of me is present. My 1-year-old, my 3-year-old, my 5, 20, 30, he's all inside of me. My 3-year-old hasn't gone anywhere. So sometimes as an adult, my 3-year-old is going to throw his little temper tantrum.
Mm-hmm.
So as an adult, my temper tantrum might look a little more sophisticated, but if I really look at it, it's probably my 5-year-old that's doing the dance.
I see. Okay.
So in some ways, not so much. The difference between probably a child and me is I have a sense of freedom and autonomy that a child does not have. With a child, if the parent leaves, the child dies. I'm not going to die if my parent leaves or my caregiver leaves at this stage of the game anyway.
So
that would be
the
big piece.
The child is more dependent.
Absolutely, yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. And their choices are very limited in how they can handle their anger and hurt feelings, aren't they?
Yes.
Their choices are not as many as an adult. I mean, we can leave, as you said. We can close the door on that situation.
Mm-hmm.
But children can't.
No.
You mentioned in your book, Robert, about self-talk.
Yes.
Self-talk. What is your self-talk?
Well, self-talk is not one of those big pieces. Self-talk is really what we say to ourselves. It doesn't really matter what I say to you. It's what you say to yourself. In other words, I could say, God, Arlene, I just love your show. I love what you're doing and the way you're sharing this valuable information with people. That's my words. They go to you. You catch them. And when you catch them, you use them however you choose to use them. You could say, oh, God, that makes me feel great. That makes me, I'm really feeling, I'm contributing something. Yes, thank you. Or you could catch those same words and say, that's just a bunch of BS. He's just trying to say that to make me feel good. That's his job. So it doesn't matter what I say to you. It's what you say to you. It shows up in relationships all the time. You know, maybe the husband would say to his wife, oh, honey, you look really cute tonight. She says, you're just saying that because you want to make some love tonight. So it doesn't matter what he says. It's what she says inside of her head. So, you know, that's what self-talk is. And then the other piece of that is, you know, how do I talk to myself when I do things that I like? How do I talk to myself when I do things that I don't like?
Mm-hmm.
So that would be positive or negative self-talk.
Are you talking about self-analysis? Is this the same concept? Or when you sit down with yourself and you talk to yourself and say, why did I do this today? What should I have done better? What could I have done better? Is that what you mean by self-talk?
No, that would be good. I wish more people did that. I mean, it's kind of the why question is probably not so good, but kind of reflecting how could have I done it better or done it differently, that's a great, great kind of reflection of looking of self-improvement. Self-talk is really that subtle little inner critic voice that's kind of quiet, that why did I do that? I can't believe, or I'm so ugly. I can't believe I'm so stupid. I'm just not any good. I'm just a terrible parent. That would be the self-talk. That would be the negative self-talk.
Uh-huh.
It's again, in order to change it, we have to be aware of that. And most people are not aware of it. It just kind of goes on almost automatically, unfortunately.
Now, I wanted to direct your attention to, you've got your book in front of you?
I will pull a copy. Yes, I have it
okay.
now.
Okay. And go ahead. On page 43, mm-hmm. you have 5 steps to change.
Oh, yes, uh-huh.
Because when I was going through the book, I was trying to choose areas in the book that would be very practical for our
yes.
parents and children to listen to the show.
Yes.
And I like that 5 steps to change. Do you want to go through those 5? Because that's the key. If you can change,
yes.
which we all strive to do, we all change for the better, hopefully.
Yes.
Some of
yes.
us don't change for the better.
Yes. Yes.
But if we can all change for the better, then we've accomplished something. So could you expound on those 5 steps to change, please?
Yes, that's. I'm glad you brought that up. It really ties right into the self-talk or the parenting process that we talked about earlier, the anger piece there. And so there are basically 5 primary stages, and there's 3 affirmations I have people memorize. The first step we've actually identified numerous times already is called awareness. Can't change anything until we're aware. So that's the first point of awareness. Now let's say I want to work on my negative self-talk. I don't want to beat up on myself anymore. Let's say that. Now what most people do when they want to change something, they slap themselves like, stop that, don't do that. So here's my negative self-talk, and then I beat up on myself for having that negative self-talk. What happens at that point, it drops from the point of awareness to the unconscious, to the unawareness. It's still going on. I'm just no longer aware of it. So that's not a healthy approach. It's not a very effective approach.
Mm-hmm.
What I ask is, so again, if it's true that I can't change anything into aware, so that means I want to be aware of every time I'm beating up on myself or I'm being critical. So that takes us to the second step I call acknowledgement, and there you have an affirmation that goes like this. Thank you for letting me be aware. Thank you for letting me be aware that I'm beating up on myself. So that sends a little message to my inner child or basic self, or that part of me that seems to know, says, oh, you want to be aware when you're beating up on yourself? And I say, yes, I do. So, boop, 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 popcorn effect, I'm starting to see it all over the place. Wonderful. Now, because every time I see it, that's an opportunity for change. Then we go to the third step called acceptance, and there the affirmation goes something like this. I forgive myself for judging myself. I forgive myself for beating up on myself. I forgive myself for judging myself for beating up on myself. Now, that's based on a whole other concept here. Let's say I have 2 little mice, one in my left hand, one in my right hand, and I want them both to cross a goal. So the one in the left, every time it doesn't move in that direction, I give a little electrical shock. It eventually crosses the goal, success. The one on my right, every time it even looks at that line, I give a little pellet. Eventually crosses the line. Success. The difference, the one in the left hand is going to be neurotic, motivated out of pain, fear, and judgment. The one on the right is going to be motivated out of loving and nurturing. Now, most of us have been trained with the slap on the hand, the motivated out of pain, fear, and judgment. That's that pattern there. We want to do it the other way. I forgive myself. That's the little pellet. I forgive myself. That's a whole other place going down that track. So again, maybe I'm driving home. I start to see myself beating up on myself. Thank you for letting me be aware of that. I forgive myself for beating up on myself. Then we go to the 4th step alternative. And there we have the affirmation that goes like this. Next time, I'll do better. Now, there's 2 parts to that. Next time, meaning, you know, I've been doing this for 20, 30, 40, 50 years, however long. So I'm probably going to do it for a while. It's a good, well-grained habit. But then we go to the next part. Next time, I'll do better, do better. There's the command. Now, we're programmed a strange way in that we only hear the last 2 or 3 words that we utter. For example, don't think of your shoes. Don't think of the light. Don't think of the telephone. Now, you had to think of all those in order not to think of those. So we tell the child, don't drop that glass. Shh, drop that glass. Don't do that, do that. Don't screw up again, screw up again. That part of us doesn't have discernment. It just does what it's told. So we're saying, next time I'll do better, do better, do better. Oh, okay, I'll do better.
Mm-hmm.
And now at this point, I would do a little brainstorming. If I was to do better, what would that look like? So maybe I'll come up with a bunch of things, as you had said, with the self-reflection, of how I could have done that better or differently, or more, I could improve my action, or what would be a positive self-talk, I could say. Mm-hmm. Then we go to the last step called action, which is, mean I'm just going to do one or all the alternatives that came up. So here again, I'm driving down the road, see myself being harsh and critical. Thank you for letting me be aware of that. I forgive myself for beating up on myself. Next time I'll do better. What can I do better? I'm just going to say, Robert, I'm loving you. I'm loving you, Robert, four or five times. Or I'm just going to see myself smiling and having a good time. Or I'm going to see how I...
watching you when you're doing this, Robert. I mean, do cops follow you, you know? Do you ever notice other people looking at you while you're driving?
As I'm driving? No, I'm too...
That's all right, Robert. You know, I'll attest the fact that you're well, okay?
So that's the five steps of change. It's really three affirmations. Thank you. I forgive myself. Next time I'll do better.
Well, we're going to continue with this discussion, but I want to acknowledge that we do have our resident telephone caller guest, Sarah Malice-Wayman, who's an attorney in Atlanta. Welcome to the show, Sarah.
Oh, thank you for welcoming me. It's been most enchanting.
Do you have, before we continue with some of the things, I mean, we've got a lot of topics here, including how do we fall in love, how do we stay in love. I mean, now really, folks, you got to take notes on this one. But do you have any questions for Robert?
I would like to know the second one, how one stays in love, since most of us know marriage is great for the first year.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a great question. Hi, Sarah. Thank you for calling in. First we have to look at how do we fall in love. That'll help us learn how to stay in love. And I'm going to look at it from a non-romantic point of view. So, and I'll do it from the male position here. So here I am, and I look at that woman and say, oh, God, she is so beautiful. Look at her eyes, her hair, and what she said. She is so special. Oh, I love her. She's great. So I program the computer to fall in love with her, and I do. Now I'm with her for a while. And then I say, I can't believe she's doing that. How many times? I hate that when she does it. I get out of I hate her. Now my self-talk becomes to not fall in love with her, and I do. So in a healthy long-term relationship, we have to, and I don't use that word very often, we have to continuously, consciously choose to fall in love with our partner. I think it's a place where we were lied to, certainly I was. I thought I fell in love and I'm always in love. No, I keep choosing to fall in love with my partner by focusing on those aspects of her that I love. And when I do, wow, she is great. Oh, wow, I love her. She's a special person. She is gorgeous. I love her. That's one of the primary ways that we keep falling in love, is by watching our self-talk and how we look at our partner.
So you have to keep reminding of yourself of why you fell in love with this person in the first place?
Well, reminding, it might be a way of what it might feel like, but it actually is, you know, the old thing is we get what we focus on. So, you know, if we were back in the car, if I start focusing on the right side of the road, my car is going to go to the right, into the curb or into the ditch. So we do get what we focus on. In fact, I encourage people to check that one out. So if I focus on the aspects of you that disgusts me, I'm going to get more of those parts that disgust me. If I focus on those parts of you that make me feel love or joy or happy, I'm going to get more of that, yes.
Well, does that stand to reason then that biblical commandments to love one another are really quite good?
I like those words, yes. Yes, absolutely. And we really look at each other and we see how beautiful we are. We do. We do start to fall in love with each other. It's awesome.
So how do we stay in love?
Well, you know,
say to these parents out there who've lived with somebody for 25 years. I'm just using a number.
That's a good number.
And you know, it's every day the same routine. Every day hearing the same things that he or she has said for the past 25 years. The old jokes, the old stories, way that person does something. It's the repetition of this that you have seen for years and years and years. And so is it a point where you just
fall out of love? And first of all, Robert, I don't even know how we define love. Do you want to define love? I mean in the romantic sense.
Well, there's something that percolates inside of our heart when we look at someone that we are in love with. I think there's probably two pieces. I love someone, then I'm in love with someone. I think we're looking at the piece where we're in love with our partner. Because we love a lot of people, but we're not in love with, hopefully, that many people, that would be confusing. But with our partner, we want to stay in love with him or her, yes. That's a great, I just love your question, Sarlene, by the way. And
thank you.
Years ago I worked with a...
Do you love me?
I do, yes. I appreciate what you're doing, very much so. I worked with a couple...
It's a positive
many,
affirmation. You see, I'm getting the whole picture.
You are, yes, you're on it. I worked with a couple who had been married actually for 30 years, and they came in and they were in a very negative place. And so, we did a whole bunch of things, some of the anger work and the self-talk and that kind of stuff, and fights have changed. But when we were finished, they said, there was one thing that you shared with me that really changed our marriage, which is what I'm going to share with you now, which was that you asked us to give each other 5 appreciation statements a day. And part of the process in being in a long-term relationship, and I'm working with a lot of couples, they don't feel appreciated for all the things that they do for each other. And so if we can start to catch, I really appreciate that you washed the dishes tonight. Thank you. I really appreciate you brushed your teeth. Thank you. Thank you for making the bed. God, that is so amazing that you took out the trash. Thank you. I love you for that. Those kinds of small little things that aren't supposed to matter, and giving words of appreciation on top of that, man, that just generates a lot of loving inside. Oh, you noticed? Yeah, thank you.
It's interesting that you say that. I had a Superior Court judge call me in his chambers one day and told me, he said, Sarah, all your client wants, which was the husband, by the way, is for her to say, I thank you for that. I appreciate you.
Yes. There it is. Yes, it's so amazing. And it is those words of appreciation and those words of thank you. They call them the 5 love channels that we all need to give on and need to receive on.
What are they?
Well, let me go through them for you.
What part of the book are they? I didn't see
it's,
that.
It's back there. Let's see if I can flip to it very quickly here. Page 182.
182.
Yeah. Okay. So we all need
5 love channels.
There you go. Yeah. And so, if you're not giving to me on my primary or secondary love channel, I won't feel loved. And the interesting thing is that what's important to me is important to you, right? No, not necessarily. But I'm going to give to you what's important to me because I think it's important to you. Now, it might be, but it might not be. And a lot of times, again, in those long-term relationships, the partner is doing a lot of stuff, but it doesn't mean anything to the other person. In other words, you're not loving me because you're not giving to me on my love channel. So what are those? Well, and I'm not going to give them in any order of preference. The first one is called acts of service, meaning, I'm going to fix the door. I'm going to take out the trash. I'm going to get your laundry. I'm going to do these little things for you. I'm going to help you out all the time. I'm going to buy you groceries, those kinds of things. Another one would be gifts. Now, gifts could be picking a flower, picking up a rock, sending you a love poem, getting you a card. It doesn't have to be an expensive thing. I'm just giving you little gifts. I was out and I thought of you, and here's a blouse,
nice
or here's
diamond.
A shirt.
I like that.
Diamonds are good. Pearls are good. So we have acts of service and we have gifts. And then we have something called quality time. Meaning, I just love to hang out and talk to you. Can you just be with me and talk and share and be with me? That kind of process. And then we have the one that we are identified, which is words of appreciation. You know, please tell me that you appreciate that I look good, that I dress well today. And then the last one would be just touching. And so we do need all of those, by the way. We do need the quality time. We do need acts of service. We do need gifts. We do need to be touched, and we do need words of appreciation. But we have our primary, secondary one in there. And again, working with couples, you often hear like the husband said, you know, you just or the wife, I can't remember which it was, you just never tell me that you appreciate me. So they identified their primary words of appreciation right there. Now they might, the other person might be doing all kinds of things for them, acts of service, let's say, but that's nice. That doesn't mean anything to me. Or they might be buying gifts. That's nice, but it doesn't mean anything. You never say how much you appreciate me.
And, you know, sometimes, Robert, people take for granted that, well, she knows that I love her. I mean, he knows that I appreciate him.
Yes.
They just don't express it.
Yes. And how many times am I going to tell you I love you?
That's right. And that's the problem. People don't realize that to stay in love takes work.
Yes, and that's why I use those words. It's continuously, consciously choosing. It is a continuous, consciously choosing to give you, to tell you, or to serve you. Yes.
Now, on page 163, you have three principles to help develop and maintain a healthy relationship. You want to briefly go to those three principles, because then we're going to go to the reading room, and there I'll ask you to read some material from your book. It's a wonderful book, folks. Look, you got to buy it. It's called The Keys to Joy-Filled Living, Robert C. Jameson, J-A-M-E-S-O-N. Where can they buy your book, Robert?
Well, they can go actually onto my website, which is the same name, thekeystojoyfilledliving.com. Or they could probably also find it on Amazon and I think Barnes and Nobles and most bookstores ought to carry it as well.
Okay, and your website again?
It's thekeystojoyfilledliving.com.
Okay. So let's go to the three principles to help develop and maintain a healthy relationship.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we've kind of touched on them, but let's look at them. The first one is any action that produces bad feelings in you is not good for your relationship. So, in other words, if I do something that creates resentment inside of myself towards you, it sacrifices the loving in the relationship. It becomes something I might call old business, or something that blocks my loving from you. So I do something for you, but now I'm angry at you. Kind of an interesting
Give me an example of that, Robert.
Let's see, I'm really exhausted, and I'm coming home, and you call me and say, could you pick up another gallon of milk? Oh, man, I don't have the money. Da-da-da-da-da, I'm so tired. Okay, here's your gallon of milk.
Mm-hmm.
So that creates, you know, that certainly isn't a loving act all of a sudden, even though the act of service, buying you the gallon of milk, is a loving act. But it probably would have been healthier to say, you know, tonight I'm just too tired. Let me pick it up tomorrow evening. Let's do something else rather than buying milk for this evening.
Mm-hmm.
Some other alternative there. So I could stay true to myself and true to you. So it created bad feelings inside of myself.
And you have another way of saying this is that anything you do for the sake of the relationship that creates a dislike for yourself or the other person will eventually destroy the relationship.
I know. I don't like that one.
Robert.
I know. I don't always like everything I see out there, you know what I mean? But it's one of those subtle little things. And that, you know, again, having couples come in, I hear that over and over again, that back there I did this, and eventually it does destroy the relationship. It creates a wedge and a wedge and a bigger wedge, and pretty soon, you know, I don't want to talk to you.
Mm-hmm. What's another principle?
The other one is really kind of the opposite of that, which is anything that creates good feelings inside of you is good for your relationship with others.
Mm-hmm.
So that means if I'm doing something for you, and I feel that sense of joy. We could use that same example of coming home and buying the milk. Wow, milk, yeah, sure, I'd love to come. Yeah, here's some milk, honey. Great, glad you asked me. It makes me feel really good that I could be of service because I know you weren't able to give out tonight, so here you go. I feel good about that.
Now, wait a minute, Robert. Have you ever heard any husband say that in your entire life? I mean, is this for public consumption or what?
Well,
they're going to say, here's your you-know-what milk, and leave me alone.
And I'd say, don't get the milk then, please. Yes, yeah. And I do understand that. And that, remember, again, I'm continuously, consciously choosing to fall in love with you. So, and if I know that making milk or bringing home milk is going to make you joyful tonight, or do I want to make...
So you have an ulterior motive.
Absolutely.
Oh, okay, I get it.
Yeah.
That goes into the third one. If you focus on what you want more, right? So this is not altruistic here. This is, I know what you want. Don't we, Sarah? We know what these men want.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's good that they want that, dear.
That's right.
Exactly. No, you know, I would like to say we're altruistic, but we do it because it makes us feel good. You know, the act of being a service, it makes us feel good inside of ourselves.
Well, now let us go. We have about 14 minutes remaining.
Okay.
So now let us go to what I call the reading room. Mm-hmm. This is the part of the show where we have the author read from part of a book that he or she has written. And I don't know what part you would like to read, Robert, but mm-hmm. I chose chapter 12, page 219 of this book, Keys to Joy-Filled Living. Whatever you'd like to read is all right with me, Robert.
All right.
But I thought that was a good synopsis of everything that you've said in the book.
Yeah, those are fun. That's fun things. So, should I just start up here?
Please,
Okay. So, the title is Three Metaphors to Remember. Begins. Together, we've explored a lot of things in this book. We discussed what feelings are, how they are used, and ways to express them in a healthy manner, so we don't hurt ourselves or others. We learn to listen to our self-talk, how our self-talk affects us, as well as others, and how to effectively change our negative self-talk to positive self-talk. Next, we discovered several ways how we keep ourselves stuck in behaviors that no longer serve us. After that, we revealed keys to getting ourselves unstuck so that we can begin to get more of what we want in our lives. From there, we discussed the various patterns to be aware of that can seem larger than life, patterns that just don't seem to go away. We uncovered the concept of boundaries, what they are, and how to set them effectively so we can honor ourselves and others in relationships. This took us to methods to stay clear and focused as we move through our lives. We then journeyed into the past and explored how to change past experiences and how to heal those memories that have kept us stuck. And finally, we ventured into the world of relationships, what a healthy relationship looks like and how to maintain this healthy relationship through time. All this might seem overwhelming. It might seem like too much information and too much work to do. If this is what you are experiencing, then let me share three short metaphors that capture a lot of what I have written. So when all is said and done, you just have to remember three concepts. Number one, if I want orange juice, I have to go where orange juice is. If I go to the kitchen sink and turn on the faucet, I'll get water. I don't care how much I kick and spit, I will still just get water. If I want orange juice, I have to get some oranges and squeeze out the juice. Get a can of orange concentrate and add water, or go to the store and buy a container of orange juice. Orange juice does not come out of my faucet. What does this mean? It means people are who they are. They are not who we want them to be. They are simply who they are. It's not our job to make them into what we want them to be. They are not their potential. They are who they are. We are changing all the time, but we're still who we are. If I want you to become to be something other than who you are, I will be disappointed. If I can celebrate who you are, accept you for who you are, and love you for being who you are, then we will be just fine. If not, then we will have problems. If I want something different, then I will need to go find someone else who can give me something different. Number two, there's a nursery rhyme that we all know and sang when we were children. It's very profound. It goes like this. Row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. Merrily, 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 life is but a dream. We are to row our boat down the stream, not up the stream or across the stream. When we row our boat down the stream, life is present, life is easy, and life is but a dream filled with joy. However, if we row our boat up the stream, we are not present in our lives. Life is not easy, and life is anything but a dream. Maybe we're not supposed to take life so seriously. Sometimes we feel we must have it our way. We feel this is the only person or place in the whole world where we can get what we want. We know we are exceptions to the rule. We know if we just do it right, we will be successful. Everyone tells this is not true. But we know we can get what we want and insist on doing it our way. We feel rowing upstream is the right thing. In fact, we feel it is the only thing we can do. We have to do it no matter what, period. We insist on getting orange juice from a faucet. And this brings me to the third and last metaphor to remember. Let's say I have several dogs. I love my dogs. They're the best. I let them play in my backyard all the time. And if you're a dog owner, then you know that dogs do what dogs do. From time to time, they relieve themselves. I must tell you, it's okay with me because I love my dogs. However, there's something about me that I must share with you. I hate cleaning up dog poop. I hate it. So I don't. Never do. Won't get close to that stuff. Now there's something else that I must share with you. This is pretty secret stuff, but I can tell you. My secret is that I love to walk barefoot in my backyard when it's pitch dark. I'm not sure why. It just does something for me. It's the only thing that does it. The only problem is that I get dog poop in between my toes when I walk in my backyard, barefoot, at night. Can't figure it out. Yuck. I hate it. What to do? Now I have a couple of choices. I could get rid of my dogs. Nope. That's not an option. I couldn't live without my dogs. So that's out. I could pick up the dog poop. No way. I already told you I don't even get close to that stuff. So that's out. What to do? I bitch and complain a bit. I've yelled and screamed. I've kicked, spit. None of that seemed to work. I could stop walking in my backyard at night barefoot. No, that's out. I told you, it's the only thing that really does it for me. So I have to keep doing that. I could hire someone to pick up my backyard. No, that won't work because I don't like other people in my backyard. What to do? I have two other options. One, I could enjoy the dog poop between my toes. It could be an experience I could learn to accept. I could use the acceptance model and change my attitude to gratitude by changing my altitude. Dog poop in toes means I have great dogs. No dog poop in toes means I don't have dogs. Or two, I could realize that when I walk in my backyard barefoot at night, I will get dog poop between my toes. It goes with the territory. I just have to wash my feet before I put on my shoes. If I pretend that I will not step in that stuff, then I am an exception to the rule. Then I will be disappointed and angry. Life will be challenging. So here's the final key to joy-filled living. Know where to get your orange juice. Row your boat gently down the stream. And if you insist on walking barefoot in your backyard, wash your feet before you put on your shoes. Life can be a dream filled with joy.
That's wonderful, Robert. Wasn't that good, Sarah?
It was excellent.
So, I'm still wondering, what do you do at night? You know, Robert, this is a very insightful book here. And again, the title, parents, is The Keys to Joy-Filled Living. We've got just a few minutes, but I did want to ask you,
what are healthy boundaries and how do we set them? Because a lot of our parents really want to know that answer.
Well, I'm glad you asked that, and it kind of goes back to what you were talking earlier about the child and the parent and being frustrated. And part of what's happening there is the parent needs to set healthy boundaries, and that certainly is not an easy process, but that's part of it. Boundaries are basically probably the simplest way to look at what a boundary is that if you say or do something and I experience an ouch over here, you have just crossed the boundary. Now, sometimes I might not know I had a boundary there until I experienced the ouch. So, again, that's that awareness. So now I can tell you, you know, can we do something different rather than you doing whatever you just said or did? So that would be the first point. So a healthy boundary, if I'm honoring your boundaries, I would know after through time, I would know that doing certain behavior makes you joyful or certain behavior makes you angry, upset, or feels hurt. So I would honor and respect what those boundaries are. Now, with a child, unfortunately, children don't always know what's good or bad for them. Being through time, we know that playing with fire and stove or matches is not a good thing. The child doesn't know. That's just curious. So that's fascinating. So how do we set a healthy boundary with the child so it doesn't play with fire and those kinds of behaviors? So and that's a pattern of reinforcement and being clear. So that would probably go ahead.
Well, how do we set healthy boundaries? Do we say this you can do, this you can't do? I mean, not in those words,
mm-hmm.
but this I will tolerate, this I won't tolerate. How do you define boundaries?
Well, In many ways, you're right on it in terms of this I'll tolerate, this I won't tolerate in terms of a child. But what we want to do again is we want to focus on what we want. So we can, again, going back to the two little mice going down the track to crossing that line, I can slap them every time they don't do the right thing, or I can reward them for every time they do the right thing. In the olden days when my dad trained us to how to house train dogs, you know, we rubbed the dog's nose in the poop and threw him out the door and hit him on the butt. But we don't do that anymore, thank God. What we do is we feed the dog and take him outside and go to the bathroom. Oh, you're so good. Bring him back in, feed him, do up. Now that it's a whole other kind of training. Mm-hmm. So if I am working with the child, any time the child is doing the behavior that I want him or her to do, that's when I'm giving the child the attention. Generally, parents don't give the child the attention until it's doing something wrong.
Oh,
and so
that's right.
Yes?
That is correct. And when they do something right, we give them attention. That's positive reinforcement.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I remember my father being descriptive with me. The sofa is not for jumping. The wall is not for riding on.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, well, Sarah,
I love
maybe
it.
You need to get some reaffirmation about what the wall is and what the sofa is, because it tells us that's what you were doing all the time. Well,
exactly.
Robert, we had a great time this evening. We're pretty much out of time. And again, folks, please get this book, The Keys to Joy-Filled Living. Robert Jamieson, Jamieson, has been our guest. And you can give us a name of our website again. The website is The Keys to Joy-Filled Living.
Exactly.
So thank you again, Robert, for being on the show. Thank you, Sarah, for being our guest again. And I really appreciate the parents who take their time to listen to the show and consider the information presented on our shows. Please tune in next Tuesday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern Time when we will discuss Adult Children of Divorce, Confused Love Seekers. You don't want to miss that show. That's going to be a great show, too. So until next week, this is your host, Dr. Arlene Kerman, reminding you that being a successful and effective co-parent is not always easy, but is definitely worth the effort. Just ask your kids. And Dr. Arlene Kerman here with the Parents Hour on Blog Talk Radio. Tune in next week. I'll be looking for you. Thank you. And thank you, Robert and Sarah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
If you're happy and you know it, clap your hands. If you're happy and you know it, clap your hands. If you're happy and you know it, then your face will surely show it. If you're happy and you know it, clap your hands. But if...
Okay, anybody there? Okay, good night. Call Robert back.
It's News Hour with Rob Bobberts and Katrina Tina.
In the news today, alien life discovered, dinosaur born using fossilized DNA, grass now powers cars, and the California lottery introduces the biggest scratchers ever!
And in other news, my hearing is officially shot. Thanks, Rob Bobberts.
Big news. Our biggest ticket ever is here. Super Ticket Scratchers. Went up to $1 million from the California Lottery. Please play responsibly. Must be 18 or older.